Good afternoon and welcome to Community Connect. I'm here with co-host Simon Rush and...
Afternoon.
We're going to kick the show off with a behind the badge with a colleague, a police colleague who's been on before. So,
good afternoon, listeners. I'm Rob Saul. I'm one of the acting inspectors in the neighbourhoods team.
Okay, and just on a brief thing before we start, we know that the Casey report came out this morning and we're not going to be focusing on that. Our focus here is going to be community neighbourhood teams. So we'll be talking in the second half of the show tangentially about the Casey report, but the focus today is to do with neighbourhood teams. Simon, have you got anything to kick us off with in general before we move on to the
police? With regard to neighbour policing teams, you mean?
No, just in general about...
Where should I start? I've been following politics and I think the second year...
Six chancellors in 2 years?
In four months, I would suggest, but... I think football clubs hold their managers longer than this central government managed to hold on to their account treasurers, don't they, which is, or chancellors.
Yes, and we could be on to our fourth Prime Minister as well, if things But there is change elsewhere, because we've got a new head of the Met.
Yeah, this is true. I think we need to focus on that till the second hour, I can play games later.
We'll have a bit of stability there. So
don't want to involve the police in things they can't be involved in today, do we?
So we've got Sir Mark Rowley who's come in to replace Cressida Dick as Commissioner, and he's got a maths degree and has... been involved in, I think his last major posting was Surrey Police, but he's very much interested in seeing the police engaging. He's aware that the Met is in a challenging position now being in special measures, but he's come out and he's welcomed all the Casey Report recommendations and wants to move on with addressing issues, which is promising. And on a more local level, our North East Basic Command Unit, BCU, which is Waltham Forest and Newham, has Simon Crick taken over as commander. So that's replacing the long-serving and possibly long-suffering Richard Tucker, who we interviewed a couple of times. But it's nice to know that he's a local boy, effectively, because he started his police career here in Newham, and he's got on, and he's also, like the commissioner, the commander, is committed to community policing and very much wedded to the ideals of policing by consent.
Yeah, it seems like they're bringing back, no disrespect to yourself, obviously, that when there's a burglary now, the police will visit.
It's important.
Which is really important.
Rob's a young man from Canning Town who's too young to remember Dixon and Doc Green, but...
I think I am as well, Dick. You speak for yourself.
but we are... it just shows that the public is being listened to. They, whilst, as we discussed in many shows in the past, policing has changed dramatically since I was born in 1916, and there is a role...
1916?
1960.
Listeners, I will stop messing around. I'm in a silly mood today. I'll behave.
But our most recent Behind the Badge series, we had someone who'd been working involved in online and cybercrime and that sort of thing. And that still continues and is a very important part of the police's work. But it's very much an issue on policing by consent and community policing, which is why we're so grateful to have Rob Saul with us today. And you say you specialise in neighbourhood policing, Rob.
Yes.
Can you tell what that means to our listeners?
Yeah, of course. So I am a dedicated inspector, so I look after purely the neighbourhood aspects of policing. So as your listeners know, we have a variety of roles and strands within the police, one of them being our emergency response team, which I've been on previously, that answered all the emergency calls, one being the neighbourhood policing team. And previously when I was on this radio station, when I was looking after the young people and schools and youth policing teams. So the neighbourhood policing teams, it's a local police team that police the local community. Each ward's got a dedicated sergeant, dedicated ward officers, two officers per ward is our promise, and a police community support officer that are there building the bridge between the community and the police and listening to what the local concerns are, whatever that may be.
And that's the Safer Neighbourhood team.
That's the Safer Neighbourhood teams, yeah. So we are in the walls listening to what's going on at a local level and then feeding that back up into the bigger, wider policing context in ensuring that we get things right from the whole of the organisation rather than just locally.
Does that mean it's almost going back to the old way of policing where... I'm not suggesting you hang out in public houses or other such buildings where officers or... you're picking up information out and about, and you're quietly being perhaps offered information to help crack crime.
Absolutely. I think to get any information, we have to be out and about. And for me, certainly as there's two neighbourhood inspectors, myself and another inspector for Newham, but we work closely in terms of our projects and our ideas and thoughts of how neighbourhood policing should be. It's about policing by consent, absolutely.
Yeah, good.
And as Robert Peel said when he set up and formed the Metropolitan Police, many, many years ago, it's the police are the community and the community are the police, and we're bringing that aspect back into neighbourhoods.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, the serving officers we've interviewed are all firmly behind the concept of policing by consent, which is why there's no desire from British police, unlike US or European police, to be armed.
Yeah.
They represent the community and they police by consent. So it's interesting that that was instilled as an ethos right from the beginning with Robert Peel.
Yes.
Sir Robert Peel.
So, yeah.
And the, well, they took over, I think, from the Bow Street Runners, who
that's
were
it,
more a local magistrate.
And one of the things, I'm going to digress a little bit, because the gentleman here, Dean, loves to spout on about history. But I always suggest to people that the first police service or police force was actually the boat police down at Wapping, not the Bow Street Runners. They were first, dragging people out the Thames.
That was one of their roles, yeah.
No, but people. Before the Bow Street Runners, it was separate.
Well, there still is. Is there a specialist unit?
There is, I'm sure there is. The Marine Support Unit, they're still at Wapping, funny enough.
Oh, is it?
Still at Wapping,
Okay, it's interesting, but I do know how to spell it. Wasn't the Bow Street Runners first?
But they all combined together, Robert Peel, the clever idea he had just to form all these local own divisions together as one service.
Well, it is said sometimes that London is a collection of villages, and there's certainly different areas of London with very different atmospheres and ways of living. And so, do you see that yourself? Well, when you're looking at different wards and different areas and communities, do you find they're quite different?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every ward is different to each other. Everyone's got different needs. You know, we've got regeneration coming into certain wards, where there's some wards where, you know, the building's been there since the 1800s in the borough. So that's going to have its own challenges. Residents that's been there, I mean, I live in Canning Town. My nan's lived in her place for 49 years. But my next door neighbour's lived there for 2 months. So there's challenges in terms of how we've seen the regeneration gone in the local area, the needs of that local person, because someone moving into Newham or Waltham Forest, you know, maybe from Surrey, has got different needs to what a local resident would have.
That's true.
Say, actually, you know what, you know, someone dropping litter is really important, but motor vehicle crime is just as, or if not more important to us than that other need. So it's just about finding that balance and then treating each ward to its own. So understanding the local needs of the residents, not listening to what's going on as a wider context, because that's what our other strands do. They respond to the 999 calls. We are local police
officers. You're on the local level, purely.
Challenging.
In the various wards you're based in.
Yeah, and then literally.
Like League of Gentlemen, it's local things for local people.
Local, absolutely.
It's interesting you mention regeneration, because that is placing a strain on communities, but also great opportunities, because sometimes it's, depending on your viewpoint, it can be regeneration, other people call it gentrification, other people call it social cleansing. And Newham, being the borough that it is, it's got a lot of large post-industrial sites that are ripe for redevelopment. So you've got Barclay Homes building 4,000 homes at West Ham Station, you've got 1,200 new homes going up at Manor Row Quarter from English City Funds, and the council itself is regenerating Custom House. Now, before we hear groans from the audience, yes, we know that was promised in the year 2000, 22 years later.
So we are on a different watch there, in fairness, so I would suggest you do point that bit out. Was promised in the past to what actually is where we've taken that?
Yeah, there are things going on. One of the problems you see in Custom House, which is known locally as the land that time forgot, is when you've got large-scale regeneration and a lot of the apartments have been building up, the population has shrunk quite significantly. It's got a run-down feel about it, and while you're in that lull before the regeneration actually starts, those empty properties can become centres for drug dealing or rough sleeping or prostitution. So there is that challenge there, whereas some of the other areas you've mentioned where there's been... Olympic Park would be one of them. Where you've got a completely new neighbourhood that, before the Olympics, used to just be marshland.
Yeah.
Oh, and the old breaker's yard.
The old breaker's yard, foreman's fish smoking plant, the rest of it. But generally, I mean, the the old railway workshops that were derelict at Stratford and that, and yet you've now got East, is E20 the postcode?
E20, yeah. Which I always find that quite tickling, really.
Yeah,
when
the new one, yeah.
When it was EastEnders piece postcode, so that's it. Adapted it. Well, that's weird, strange, but...
Yeah, so you've got the policing needs there are completely different.
Absolutely, yeah.
Suddenly, if you've got 4,000 new homes, that's probably getting on for 12,000 people. That's the size of a large village or a small town.
Yep.
And that's going to have very different policing needs at West Ham.
Yeah.
And I know that Barclay Homes, I'm a registered representative on the panel with them, they're very interested to meet the anchor institutions like the schools, but also the fire service, the police and the rest, just so that the residents can get to meet them and you can work out your operational activities there. Because it's all, at the moment, it's all massive construction site. So, what's your favourite local neighbourhood then? Can you tell us?
Of course, I can't. I'm an East End boy through and through, yeah. E16, so I can't. But Kennington, it's, when I look at Kennington, most people that I speak to, certainly in the police, are like, oh, but you're from Kennington. But because I'm from there, I was born in Kennington, I still live in Kennington, and I police Kennington. I think it's a different... I see Kennington differently. It's my community.
Yeah, because you know the area.
I know the area, and I understand it. And, you know, I know my neighbours. My neighbours know me, and I think it's a great area. But I think the whole of Newham has its different needs, different challenges, and different unique points, I would say, you know.
I agree with you. I mean, I was born in 1960 and grew up in Beckton, and then in 1966 when I was six we moved to West Ham, and when I think back tonight how the world was in 1960, it was a completely different world then, and now we've got huge developments. I mean, you look at the legacy of the Olympics a decade on in terms of sporting facilities, the whole Stratford International and the train stations, the whole logistics. You can get on a train at West Ham or on one of the other places. West Ham takes you into Fenchurch Street, Stratford, you're into Liverpool Street within 9 or 12 minutes. You see the people moving in because of all those...
which is quite a big attraction, obviously, because if you are lucky enough to obtain a mortgage, not that you can anymore, especially with the interest... Oh, no, here I go again, that's for later.
But I think it's important not to lose that community aspect, because there's some neighbours... You don't know who your neighbours are, whereas, you know, before you could leave your door open and you know that, you know, your next door neighbour will have a watch over your property. But I think it's really important that we don't lose that local level, that local community spirit. And that's, you know, by going to the wall panels, going to the local meetings with the councillors, the fun fairs and the community days that we have, go into them so you can be that community. I don't want us to lose that in Newham anywhere.
Yeah, that's really important. It's like, well, we do, as councillors, we do that as well. I've met you before with seven of them, I think, where we all do the same sort of thing. So the local neighbourhood know we're there.
That's something we often mention here on the show, that the community wealth building programme of Newham Council isn't just about building community wealth in terms of business and jobs and things like that. It's all about social wealth. It's about bringing people together and getting them involved. And one of the problems we've faced in my lifetime in Newham is more and more of the people who work in Newham, whether it's police, fire officers, teachers,
can
no longer afford to live here because they've been priced out.
Yeah.
So you don't grow up here. So then you're commuting in, and people aren't aware of the history and heritage of the site, so it can be more of a challenge to get people there to meet the local residents. Because I can imagine after you finish a shift, I can imagine it, or a teacher, you think, well, now I'm going to go home. And so some people who are working here are facing an hour and a half's commute sometimes to get home. So they're
not going to stop a restaurant, go to a local
to have a drink
place,
or go to a meeting unless they have to, like parents' evening. So it makes it a challenge to bring those people into the community and vice versa. But as we discussed on so many shows behind the badge, once the community get aware of the local office, like the SNC, the Safer Neighbourhood team, if they see them walking around, if they drop into the shops, if they have a cup of tea in the cafe, people can see them and see them as they're approachable. They're not just remote people,
of course,
sitting in a control room behind a screen.
And it's putting that name to the officer, you know, that friendly police officer that you can approach if you've got a local concern or worry, whatever it is, you know. And we've got partnership with the local authority, the councillors, that we can go into and report things to them if the local residents don't feel that they can. So we can hold that conversation on their behalf, and likewise with the councillors. So it's really important, really, that as a local officer, that the officers know their residents, know what the challenges are, And if, you know, there's mobility issues, we get round to the address, we speak to them, and it's about looking for, certainly from us as the inspectors running neighbourhoods, it's how do we ensure that our communication with all residents is we're there. So the coffee with a copper, we're going to bring that back, where we're going to advertise, we're going to be in the library.
Let us know which library and what time and stuff, because with my other hat on, obviously I'll...
Yeah, and I think it's just important just to... You know, not everyone that has access to social media, not everybody has access.
It's actually quite surprising. An awful lot of people don't. Yeah. Even just local friends that have nothing to do with the political world or running, just local people you need to know. You didn't see what I put. I've got it. A lot of people have it, but I don't think they actually use it.
The Newham Housing Services Community Fund Days just off the Barking Road, and Simon was there with some of his other councillors. Your officers came round and walked around, were chatting with people, and then you got to meet a resident, didn't you? The woman who's having a mobility scooter bone. And it's these things.
Yeah.
This woman, you can explain about the, what's going on with her, but how she could approach you and see you. And
she saw us, realised we explained with the new council, so we explained how it works, send us what you need, and we're working on it. Unfortunately, we're still working on that one at the moment because.
But that's
part of what we do.
And then because the police officers there, you can easily say, look, this is a vulnerable person. Could you look in on her now and again?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's just that, you know, walking around, talking to them, engage with them, and they might be isolated.
I think I've actually. I'm doing a walk around, I think it's October the 26th, with some officers in our boundary ward as well.
Brilliant.
We haven't set up a meeting point place yet, but it's all done, so we are doing that.
Like Plashek and Marydown, you're in a new ward, aren't you?
Yeah.
Which is Plaster West, Canning Town East.
Which
is a bit of a mouth. I think it's the longest.
It's also one of the largest ones, boundaries as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It makes it even more fun, so...
Some of the south of the borough are quite large, but I think there's some like Beckton, they're quite sparsely populated. Yeah. A lot of it's...
And of course, we've got all the new builds coming in as well, so that's part of the reasons for the boundary change in the site. In this. Did that happen with the police officers as well?
We've had all new boundaries.
So you had to reassign
new officers to each of the new walls that we've got in line with what's going on locally as...
We're going to take a break now for some messages, but we'd like, after the break, it would be nice to talk a little bit about the police war panels.
Yeah,
because I attended one recently and someone turned up and they went, oh, they've changed the boundaries, you're not in the school this one anymore. We'll talk about that after the break.
Revive FM 94.0. On the radio.
On your mobile.
And online.
And welcome back to the second section of this show. And it's Behind the Badge, and we've got Inspector Rob Sewell here with us, and he's a Newham born and bred, and he's been talking about his role as an inspector dealing with neighbourhood policing, and one key element of that is the PWP, the Police Ward Panels. Now, these are not community organisations, and they're not democracies. They're set up by the police, they're run by the Metropolitan Police overall in London, and they involve getting... a chair selected by the Met, a local resident who works with local councillors, the police ward sergeant, and the PCSOs and the dedicated neighbourhood officers, along with anchor institutions when required, like schools or local businesses. Could you give us a little bit of a better explanation?
I think that was a really, really good explanation, actually. So these wall panels are an opportunity for local residents at a local level to meet their local officers to come together about concerns and worries. What we tend to do is, as you said, rightly so, we elect a chair that sort of oversees the meeting and gets the residents on board. And that's open to every single resident in that particular ward. And it is ward boundary. So it's set up in the walls that we're setting up with, because each ward's got a dedicated police team that work that particular ward. So what happens in the Olympic Village, their ward priorities will be different to Lit Wilford ward, because it's the two different areas, areas of Newham, two different challenges, and it's unique to them particular areas. So what the ward panel does, it meets every three months, and they will meet with a local inspector if they're available, or certainly the local ward sergeant and the officers and the support officer. They'll come to the meeting, which will be held at a local venue, which can be a faith venue, church, mosque, temple, a local business, a local cafe, and they will meet normally in the evenings to discuss what's been going on in their ward, in their community, in terms of crime, what we're doing, and we will provide an update to the residents about what activities we've been doing to combat crime, prevention work and some activities we've been conducting in the last couple of months. At that particular meeting, you can hold us to account. It's really important that you are, that wall panel is our critical friend. So the local councillors will be invited to that meeting and you could be our critical friend. So tell us when we're doing something really, really good and you're really happy with the service that you've got or the policing presence on the streets, and also be that critical friend when something's not going so well. So when, you know, there has been an increase in antisocial behaviour, vehicle crime at 2 o'clock in the morning, for example, you can then steer your wall priority, which is three. One is set by the police, which is a violence priority, and that's around violence against women and girls, so robberies.
So there are three priorities.
Three priorities that are set.
The first is set by the police, which is
it's a violence priority. So that will be around violence against women and girls, robbery, youth violence, and violence in general, and that will be steered towards combating what we're going to do in the ward around that particular activity. So if it's violence against women and girls, we'll come up with an operation around what we're doing to keep females safe in that particular ward. If it's a robbery, if there's an increase in robberies, we'll do some work around robbery initiatives and prevention work, talking to youth groups and youth clubs, schools, do some piece of work there.
So something like Operation Scepter.
Yes,
and that's an initiative every year now.
It is, yeah.
Knife crime.
It is, and it's coming up in September. The 14th is Operation Scepter Week, and that's a knife crime initiative that we run as a Met Police wide. So every police officer will be doing some work around youth violence, knife crime, knife carrying, selling knives to young people, and we work with the local authority trading standards, do some covert operations to businesses that's arming young people with knives.
I know that's one of the things that overlaps with the Newham Council on Social Behaviour, but also litter picking, because I've known some groups, and there's a thing called plogging where councillors get involved doing litter picking, and often they'll come across a bag and there'll be a concealed weapon in it which has been dropped by someone who presumably is, for whatever reason, not kept it with him. One of the other things that struck me as strange, I was speaking to a drainage engineer who said often people drop knives down drains.
Yeah,
I suppose it's a quick and easy way to get
it. It's easier, you walk over it, drop it,
and it's out of view then, out of sight. Yeah,
and things like knife amnesties, are they found to be effective when you get people to drop them off?
They are, but there is still that fear that, you know, if they bring a knife into the bin to dispose of it, that is forensics going to be taken. So it's that myth around, you know, it is anonymous, just deposit the knives into a safe place at a safe location, but there is still that fear around, am I going to be questioned, am I going to be interviewed, am I going to be arrested?
Often when I'm reading about doing research on the police operation, I come across something, a VRU, a violence reduction unit.
Yeah.
Is that a specialist group?
Or? So our violence reduction unit is our VSU, so it's exactly the same. So we work with, in each areas, each borough, BCU have got a dedicated team dealing with violence. So their day-to-day job is to go out to look at our high-risk offenders, our gang nominals, those that are in the community to disrupt, and their role is disruption. So they'll go out and enforce, making sure that if we are putting someone on bail conditions, they're adhering to it. If not, presenting before the justice of peace and ensuring that we're continuing that piece of work. So they deal with the most violent nominals within our communities.
I can remember Commander Tucker talking about this when he was interviewed, and he was saying our job's just to make their life uncomfortable.
Yeah,
to let them know that we're looking at them, they're under surveillance, whether it's them in person, keep their vehicles.
Yeah, exactly that.
So, well, that's fascinating.
It's quite important. Now, I think one of the other things that, you know, I'm sure you're probably, the service is actually doing with that as well, is you often hear the excuse when it's a youngster and that person's got pulled over, searched, and knife found on them, and it's my own protection.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's probably quite a lot, probably do carry it because it's in their mind that's.
Yeah. And I think for in my previous role, it's around prevention.
Yeah.
So it's about what's going on at home, and have they been caught up? Is it a safeguarding matter rather than a criminal matter? And it's us as local police, it's really important to understand that, to look at other partners and agencies
this
to support the family.
Your previous role as a schools officer, where you're dealing with children who are involved in violence, but are they the vulnerable party?
Of course they are, Yeah, so the vulnerable. So it's about looking at our partners and agencies to look at what else we can do, because, we can arrest someone for carrying a knife, and absolutely we will, because there's no place for that, zero tolerance. And we're robust with taking knives off the street, 100%. But it's about the courts, if they allow them to go out the next day, are they going to carry a knife again? Is someone going to be seriously injured or killed? So it's about that education piece, the preventative work, and working with other agencies and bringing them in, such as, you know, CAMHS, mental health, social services, the local authority, looking at the housing situation. What else can we do to make them feel a bit more safer, a bit more at comfort, at ease at home, and just that wraparound care?
That's interesting, because we've talked about how Glasgow used to be, at one stage, was the knife capital of Europe, and a very successful program run originally by Strathclyde, now by Police Scotland, to reduce violent knife crime. And it was this multidisciplinary agency. The police said, we can't arrest a way out of this situation.
Yeah.
And they then started working with medical teams, probation officers, judges, courts. So young people would go along, see courts and see court trials, and actually meet people convicted of violent knife crime. And it was found to be a very effective policy. And I see that there's different groups in Newham Council. I think there's a youth protection group and a safeguarding board and other things. So working with, through those organisations run by local authorities, the police can meet up with other agencies. Have you found that to be a very effective approach? A
very effective approach. And then it just goes back down to the neighbourhood level, that we then look at the vulnerable people in the wards, in the area that they patrol, and monitor them and continue to put that support in place.
Because I suppose, with what I was saying earlier about some younger people carry offensive weapons because it makes them feel safe, I suppose when you look into it a bit deep, it could be because they're pure, simply bullied, could be at home, could be on the street, or it's because they're getting involved in the more nasty side of
and they might not know where to go, you know. And
right.
And I think for me, certainly my neighbourhood teams, it's about being out there. You can't, driving a police vehicle, you can't see and hear what's going on the ground. You can't see or hear what's going on in the local park or the open spaces or the garage areas. You need to be on foot to get that information to show that you're there, you're willing and you're approachable. But there's a different team that deal with the fast-paced policing.
Gotcha.
My teams deal with local issues and local concerns and that support, and that's really important.
It's a lot easier to smoke, I don't know what to call them, but other than the herbal cigarettes on foot than it is if you're in the car, in the wet,
dry
area.
Although your area of policing isn't quite as glamorous as some of the other response units, it's more, you seem to be focused much more on raising awareness and prevention of crime.
Yeah, and long-term problem solving. So, you know, local issues that affect residents. And I dealt with a case just the other week, actually, where a resident from Bromley Borough was moved into Waltham Forest. But prior to Waltham Forest, he was moved into Lewisham, and he continues to harass his neighbours by blaring out music at 3 a.m. in the morning, which then caused really upset amongst the other residents, with young kids and a brand new baby being woken up at night, now tired, can't go to school, and it was affecting everyone's mental health. So my team with the local authority issued a community protection warning notice, an ASB warning notice, that's called, and then we issued a notice, which is an arrestable offence, a summary offence, and we arrested them and put them before the courts. And that person's now been moved out of our local authority, back to the local authority where he is a resident, and it's down for them to continue that management. So we are really listening to what is affecting them, and 3 a.m. music, some people would say, well, I'll do that.
You might do it on
a Friday or Saturday night. I might be out partying, but
for a birthday,
if it's a continuous, it's about that long-term problem solving about what is affecting our residents, what's affecting our community, and it was that. And once we had done all the actions and worked closely with the residents and the local authority, they're extremely grateful that that one particular incident has been resolved. And it's about that long-term.
Which has had an impact on a considerable number of families.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good. And as I said, one of the spin-offs from the building up the police ward panels is that we do have some new wards, and over in Canning Town, where Sergeant Matt Taylor held a very effective meeting earlier this month. At the next meeting, we'll be inviting some residents and other people along from other wards to see how a police ward panel operates. And then the new wards, including your side, I imagine, will be creating your own.
Well, I hope so. I'm waiting for that to be created so I can attend the first one. Moving on a little bit, how do residents actually get to hear? Well, how are the police panels publicised?
Yeah, so this is done on our website, through the Met Police website, where if you put in your postcode, it should come up, who's your local team? Get in contact with them to say, I would like to be part of that ward panel to steer the directions of my local officers on what I want them to do. And we will publicise on our individual Twitters, on our Twitter account, our Instagram, Facebook, and everything else that we use. But most importantly, bringing back some of the local things we used to do 10 years ago, like the Coffee with the Copper, we're going to put signpost it up that people that don't have social media, don't have access to the internet.
Yeah, because that's really important. So you do it at libraries or...
Absolutely. So officers will be trying to encourage people to come along.
That's a very effective
supermarkets, I'm hoping, local businesses.
Particularly in Europe, given the nature of the residents here. Many people from overseas don't have English as their first language for whatever reason, suffering digital exclusion, the rest of it. I must say, we found that's a very effective way of communicating because, as regular listeners know, I was a member of the Newham Council COVID-19 Health Champions, which was pioneered by Newham, where they got various residents, people involved in voluntary community and faith groups, to get message out to the community. And that resonates very well in Newham, getting that non-verbal communication, getting things out there that don't rely just, it's all on the website. And it's proved to be very effective.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And... Well, you'll be up for a coffee with a copper, won't you?
Only if it's posh coffee, because I only drink espresso.
Cake, yeah. Cake, that sold it.
Instant coffee I don't tend to drink, which is a problem. Of course I will.
Anything like that.
Anything that copper, helps.
Yeah, it's always police good. Wall panels, where the police are not always being encountered in a dangerous, violent response to an incident situation, but a more relaxed time where people can talk about things
and just approach us, you know. And as I said, we set one of the priorities, which will be a violence one, but the other two are steered by that group, that wall panel. They set the other two priorities for their area for the next 3 months, and then we will feed back on what we've been doing to target the priorities that the community have set. The residents have said this is an issue. The following meeting we'll come back and feed back on statistics around what we've been doing proactively to reduce their fear, increase confidence. Trust and confidence is the number one priority for us at the moment, and it's all about listening to our residents and what's affecting them.
And one of the mechanisms for that is the Community Matters. Is that the quarterly survey?
Yeah,
where communities can vote on what issues matter to them.
Yeah, and again, it's localised, so it's not, you know, a corporate model that we're using. It's all about local. What's affected local people and what we're doing locally to deal with some of them issues.
I think another way, which may be a good way of approaching it, especially for children perhaps coming back from broken homes or difficult families or difficult backgrounds is probably the better word, is there's always this thing that animals help. Mm. So obviously the police have police dogs, police horses, and various other animals. Perhaps they could attend the odd function, where you're at.
Yeah.
So people can, you know, they might want to talk to you, but they might want to stroke the nice looking
and
dog.
And I think it's about, absolutely, I was at one of the events at Plasto Fire Station about 3 months ago, a community fun day, and we had our dog unit there, our dog section. And if we are aware of the local events that's been organised, absolutely we can put the feelers out to our colleagues in the different strands to come along. Obviously, operational needs must be first.
Well, of course.
But 9 times out of 10, they'll be really up for coming out and meeting local residents.
Well, I know that that's very effective because at the weekend I went to the Excel Centre for a show called Discover Dogs. And part of the displays there was the West Midlands Police dog team. And that was really interesting, seeing the different work that police dogs do. It's not a man with a knife. Things that the dogs, where they search for things, for explosives or drugs and other things.
Well, even missing people, obviously, picking up scent and things of that nature.
Afterwards, the officers and the animals met the public, and to see people, and as Simon said, they'd see the children striking the police dogs and everything, and there was a young puppy that everyone liked because it was just started training for a month, was getting very excited. But yeah, that thing. So yes, it'd be interesting to follow up on the availability of arranging a community event where the police horses and police dogs could
absolutely
be there.
Absolutely,
probably not the right time of year for it. But
It's a bit cold now, but no. Certainly as it gets warmer in coming months.
Spring and things.
Great, well, we'll take a break now for some messages. We'll be back shortly.
Revive FM.
94.0. On the radio.
On your mobile.
And online.
And welcome back to the final part of this show. And this is a Behind the Badge with Inspector Rob Saw. And as, once again, time's run away with us, Rob, as we come towards the end of the program, is there anything you'd particularly like to highlight in terms of neighbourhood policing rather than...
I think it's important that the residents see our police officers as a local friendly face, approachable, someone that they can rely on. I'm using the motive, we're going back to basics. I want police officers on the street, policing the street by foot, so you can see what's going on and the feel of what the concerns are, because you can't see that in a vehicle, you can't hear that in a vehicle. And the vehicles are good for the purpose, they've got a purpose, absolutely, of course they have. But it's about that local community spirit that I want to reunite with our officers and get that drive in, so they want to make that local difference and that long-term problem solving. So it's not, you know, as I said at the beginning of the show, we've got officers that go out and do the fast pace responding to the calls, but our neighbourhood officers is about that neighbourhood feel. What is the issues? What can we do together, working with them and the local authority, to try and reduce whatever concern it is? And we're really passionate about that.
Great. And you mentioned earlier Operation Sceptre begins on the 14th of November.
It does, yes.
Ken, before you put it out, can you explain again, I think, what Operation Sceptre is again?
Yeah, no worries. So, thank you. Several times in the year, the Metropolitan Police, we run Operation Sceptre, which is a knife crime-led operation, looking at knife crime, youth violence, and businesses that are selling knives to young people. Right. For the wrong intentions. So we'll do a week-long activity where we will go out in the community conducting weapon sweeps in places where we know it's a concern.
I've got you. So does that mean when you're checking on businesses that are selling to underage, you're putting obviously underage?
We are. So we're working with the local...
Same as trying to sell tobacco.
Absolutely, yeah. Exactly that. So our trading standards team, which I must comment on, yes. I've been working for a number of years. They're absolutely outstanding in Newham. They're really, really good at their job. The leads there, they're really passionate about reducing the sales of knives, fireworks, tobacco, alcohol to young people, because it's an addiction for a young person to have alcohol. And they're really taking a robust, enforceable approach to businesses that are selling knives to young people. We will prosecute you. And that message has gone out to everybody, every business in Newham, that we will take a zero tolerance approach. If you sell a knife to a young person without challenging, we will come after you and we'll put you before the courts.
I assume as well that links in with, obviously, I'm not sure because I'm not involved in licensing, but with obviously alcohol and tobacco, that's obvious, but with regards to knives, perhaps it's slightly different. But do I assume you also inform London Borough of Newham, this particular business?
Yeah, so we work with London Borough of Newham, so it's a joint patrols.
Oh, right, good, didn't realise that.
Yeah, it's a joint patrols with our training standards officers, who are LBN authority officers that are, you know, endorsed to go out and do that enforceable activity. We work closely with them, so we'll go out on patrol with a young person, and it could be that we utilise some of our cadets, not only police, fire, ambulance, the military cadets that we've got in Newham. We've got loads of young people that are doing some amazing work, and we'll send them out because they're passionate about keeping themselves safe. So they'll go out, local residents as well, under the age of 18, we'll go out to the local businesses. And normally what the training standards team do is they will send some communication to all the businesses around knife selling, fireworks selling, ensuring that they understand the legal aspect of what will happen if they do sell a knife to a young person. And then we go in and do them activities and undercover operations to ensure that the training and the messages, the warning they've had, is being enforced. So a lot of businesses tend to do Challenge 21 rather than 18 for knives, for example. Yeah.
Right, and am I right in thinking that clubs and pubs that sell alcohol are also subject to this, and their licences, the police, when they apply for their licences to be renewed, the police can make a statement on it?
Absolutely, yeah. So we'll put a statement of how many times we've been in there, how many times there's been, you know, particular incidents, if it's involved in drugs or fights or violence or selling to alcohol of young
people. Potentially they could lose their licence.
They could lose their licence, yeah.
Which I imagine has a devastating impact on your business.
Exactly. So it's in their interest to listen and, you know, that education piece that we're doing with our colleagues in Newham Council to understand the needs.
And I've heard mention of the seasons, the four seasons, not the music by Vivaldi, but we're now coming into autumn. So anything special?
Yeah, so as of today, actually, it's a launch of Operation Autumn Nights, which is a 3-week initiative led by local officers across Newham and Woven Forest. And we are going out to local areas where there's a high risk of antisocial behaviour. We're targeting high risk nominals. We're conducting that engagement piece in key locations, so Stratford Park, for example, High Street North, Stratford Town Centre, and we'll be out there visible, talking to residents about concerns around antisocial behaviour. As we all know, as we lead up to Halloween, Bonfire Night, statistics show that we see an increase in violence, we see an increase in robberies, and we see an increase certainly in antisocial behaviour. It's the most number one what we see an increase in.
It's a silly question, but it's specifically around Halloween. Is that because some people think if they dress up wearing Halloween gear, they can mould in with what's going on, knock, door knock and...
Yeah, so exactly that. So we, the buses that we have is the local officers will be going out on a carrier or on a minibus. They'll go to the key locations, patrol, engage, and enforce if we need to. So it's a zero tolerance approach. We want everyone to feel safe during these key...
I think there's a little bit of a warning there, isn't there? Come Halloween night in October, that it is the 31st, isn't it? Of course it is. That when you do open the door and you expect to see, they're normally under 12, aren't they, most of the children that are involved in it. Make sure, number one, make sure they're with an adult, because I think that's an opponent who appears to be close to them, not somebody that's just picked them up, not literally, but you know what I'm saying. And if they're sort of 16, 17 upwards, I would suggest you don't open the door.
And any worries, just call us, 101 and emergency 999, we'll come out, because there's a lot of policing, our policing plan around autumn nights, ensuring that everyone go out, for those that are planning to go and, you know, celebrate Halloween and do, you know, trick or treat for the young children.
They
feel safe and they feel that they can do it. And for those that don't want to take part in that, are just going about their day to day business, coming to and from work, going to and from school or college, that they feel safe.
I think these days, I think from my understanding, the way as a child or as a parent, I think, if a house has got a pumpkin outside, that means you can knock on the door. I believe that's now what goes on.
So they can
differentiate.
The pumpkins.
Because my wife gets very upset because the last few years she buys in the load of sweets and chocolates, you know, that type of stuff. And nobody turns up.
I've got some mini pumpkins on the allotment, so I'll bring one along for you so you can stick it outside.
Brilliant.
One final point as we bring the show to a close. There's a BBC Radio 4 series called It's a Fair Cop, where a chap called Alfie Moore, who's an ex-police officer, now he's a stand-up comedian, takes people through things. And it's never the glamorous stuff. I think he was based in the Midlands, and the last one was how he got involved in the training to become a custody sergeant. And it was, see, they asked members of the public to, he stops the show and says, okay, what would you do in this situation? And it's actually really interesting to see, A, the inventive responses from members of the public. I'm asking.
I love that.
But I must say, in my lifetime, I've seen increasing amount of support coming out for the police now. And I think we probably saw that during the operation, which is, I believe, is one of the biggest in the Met's history, was for the funeral of the Queen.
I think that
it's the biggest policing operation we've ever seen.
Because someone said it's even bigger than the Olympics. It was the number of people involved.
Well, it was more spread, I suppose, isn't it?
Concentrated,
with all the heads of state.
Extremely well. You had everything from highly visible targets like heads of state, right down to, there's been a lot of civil disorder in the UK with whether Extinction Rebellion and some of these offshoot groups and the rest of it. But I must say, considering it's such a complex event, whereas the Olympics is spread out over several weeks, this was over a 2-day period. Getting prepping for it. And several people said to me how impressed they were with how well the police dealt with that.
And we're really thankful for the feedback, because sometimes, you know, the only time the officers are getting praise is if we're in the press for the wrong reasons. And it's really important. And I think Behind This Badge initiative is just an opportunity for us to show the normal side of policing, side to us, you know, because...
What you're basically saying is that what the majority of policemen actually do, the majority.
And, you know, with the Operation London Bridge, which was the operation leading up to the funeral on the actual day, it showed us at our best.
I don't suppose why is it called Operation London Bridge when it is regarding the monarch, and nobody says that. So I have asked a few people, and why London Bridge?
The names for police operations are generated by a specific system. They don't pick a name that fits.
But that must have been in place for quite a long time, for obvious reasons, that operation name, for when it's instigated. But I was just, is it named like a hurricane? It's got to start with a L and it's after a bridge.
How the police operations like SEPTA get their name.
Yeah.
I just find it quite interesting. And why have we come up with this
name? I think that, to be honest, I don't know the answer to that question, but like you said, with the policing operation, our intelligence team that give us the operational lead name, hit a button, it comes up, Operation Scepter, Operation.
Oh, so it's boring. It's computer generated.
This is the name of the operation. So, but London Bridge, I'm not sure where it's. You know, it's been like you said, in place for quite a few years.
Okay, well, that's once again we've run out of time, and there's still so many other things to talk about. But thanks so much, Inspector Till, for coming in and sharing this time and giving us a really detailed insight, not just into your point of view on neighbourhood policing works, but more importantly, I think one of the key takeaways from the show, at least for me, is how the public can engage in neighbourhood policing.
Yeah,
I think that's really important. It feels like it's showing results, doesn't it? So in the 6 months I've been in as a councillor, it feels a bit friendlier out there.
Yeah, it's got to be. You know, we're here, we're changing, and we're here to listen and be part of the community. So thank you very much for inviting me. And, until next time, I'm sure I'm in another role.
That's the thing about behind the badge. It'll keep going until we run out of crime.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a nice thought. But
okay, and thanks so much for listening.